Thanks for tuning in for the January 25th podcast. I'm Jose Merino, Editor-in-Chief of the Neurology family of journals. In this week's feature interview, Dr. Winston Chong discusses the new AAN position statement on ethical considerations on the use of aducanumab in patients with Alzheimer's disease, including recommendations of what to include in discussions on informed consent with the family and the patient.
Hi, it's Jeff Ratliff with the Neurology Podcast and Thomas Jefferson University. Welcome to this week's featured article interview. I'm lucky to welcome back Winston Chong from the University of California, San Francisco this week. Back on the September 27th episode of the podcast, we spoke with Winston about the AAN's published position statement on the ethical considerations in dementia diagnosis and care, on which he'd been the lead author. The timing of that position statement and our recording of that podcast meant that the June 2020 FDA approval of aducanumab for the treatment of Alzheimer's disease occurred too late to be included in that official AAN position statement. We touched briefly on the approval of aducanumab in that episode, but in the background, Winston and the rest of the Ethics, Law, and Humanities Committee were working to draft a specific AAM position statement that directly addressed the ethical considerations that go into aducanumab's availability as a new treatment for Alzheimer's disease. So this week, we've brought Winston back to talk about this position statement from the AAN, which is titled Decisions with Patients and Families Regarding Aducanumab and Alzheimer's Disease with Recommendations for Consent. Welcome back, Winston.
Thanks for having me, and I'm so glad to finally be able to discuss this position statement. It's been undergoing various committee and journal reviews for several months now.
Yeah, I'm glad we're able to find this time and to have this discussion. Our listeners will probably recall a number of special reports that we released back in June and July of 2021, covering the discussions regarding the science of aducanumab as well as its implications for its potential contribution to financial toxicity within the realm of neurologic medications. Winston, the beginning of this position statement outlines that we as clinicians likely have to shift our thought process a little bit talking about FDA-approved therapies. You discussed that this FDA approval occurred despite a lack of support from the advisory committee, and despite a lack of evidence showing a clear clinical benefit to patients who were enrolled in the trial. To set the table for our discussion, how does this process for aducanumab frame the discussion that we're going to have with patients and families who come in inquiring about what they see as a new FDA-approved therapy for Alzheimer's disease?
Well, some of my patients are already aware of the FDA approval and the controversy around it. Some patients have heard a little bit about a new drug for Alzheimer's disease and don't know much else, and some patients have asked questions like, hey, is there any new research or promising new treatments I should know about? I think that when patients come in asking for information, it can be helpful to say at least a little about why this approval was so unusual and controversial, and that this can set the stage for why we need to think so carefully about this medication and whether it's the right choice for an individual patient.
The position statement then goes on to outline the decisions and considerations regarding aducanumab within the paradigm of the bioethical principles that we're familiar with of beneficence, non-maleficence, justice, and autonomy. I want to start by combining the considerations regarding beneficence and non-maleficence when it comes to aducanumab. How does the combination of the clinical trial data and the potential financial toxicity of this treatment inform our conversations with patients and families affected by Alzheimer's along these ethical principles specifically?
Well, based on the judgment of the FDA's advisory committee and the FDA's own rationale for approval, as of now, we don't have persuasive evidence of clinical benefit with discordant results between two parallel trials that were stopped early. We do have clear evidence of harm. Over a third of patients receiving the approved dose had cerebral inflammation in the form of amyloid-related imaging abnormalities, or ARIA, which produced clinical symptoms in about 1 in 10 patients randomized to full dose. You also mentioned financial toxicity, and we should say that the drug is very expensive, including costs for infusion, repeated imaging, and vigilant monitoring, and these are all issues that patients and families need to be aware of to make informed decisions about this treatment.
Yeah, it sounds like the balance of ambiguous or depending on how you look at it, lack of presence of clear benefit, but certainly a much more clear presence of potential harms, both financially as well as neurologically with this drug, make these ethical considerations a challenge potentially for families and neurologists to engage with.
Yeah, I think it's tricky to communicate the ambiguity here, in particular with the clinical trial data being as messy as they've been.
Moving on to the ethical principle of justice, your paper outlines that we need to look at the larger scale implications of aducanumab's availability. Podcast listeners may recall the specific conversation between Jason Crowell and Steve Pearson from the June 17 episode, which discussed the financial and greater economic impact. Your position statement discusses, again, that the impact aducanumab may have on our federally administered health coverage programs, specifically Medicare, are still to be determined. The position statement also adds important ethical considerations, specifically as related to justice, that stem from a lack of representation of underrepresented minority patients in the clinical trials we've mentioned already. Can you summarize these issues for us? Tell us the key points that the position statement really wants to emphasize in this realm.
Sure, and there's actually been some developments even since the position statement was developed. Given the tremendous cost of this drug and the large potential patient population, we're already seeing the effects of its approval on families' finances and the Medicare system. In November, Medicare announced the largest increase in premium costs in Medicare history, an increase of more than $20 per month for every Medicare Part B beneficiary, and that's regardless of whether they have Alzheimer's disease or whatever use aducanumab. Most of this increase was due to possible system costs if Medicare does decide to cover aducanumab, so these premiums could increase further if aducanumab is fully covered by Medicare. So this is something that's hitting the pocketbooks of all our Medicare patients right now, and because it's most burdensome on those with low incomes and less resources, this is a negative effect on health equity. On the topic of biased clinical trial enrollment, I want to mention a viewpoint written by Jennifer Manley and Maria Glimmer and referenced in our statement. Across the two pivotal trials, there were 6 Black patients and no Indigenous patients who received the approved dose. About 3% of participants were Hispanic. This pattern of exclusion in clinical trials is, of course, not a problem that's unique to aducanumab. This is a problem we have throughout neurology and throughout medicine. But aducanumab raises special concerns because of its costs and its adverse effects. So already, Black, Indigenous, and Hispanic Medicare beneficiaries are paying increased Part B premiums because of a drug that has not been adequately tested in their populations. We also know that these groups have a higher burden of chronic conditions like hypertension or requiring anticoagulation that could increase the likelihood of adverse events. In our view, the lack of representative clinical trial data should be disclosed as part of the consent process for patients in these groups.
And I'm glad you mentioned that last part, that as we're informing patients and talking with patients, if they do decide to move forward with starting aducanumab, that consent process really does need to include all of these considerations surrounding who was in the trial and more specifically, who was not in the trial and who was excluded for potentially lots of different reasons, for reasons that you've mentioned.
Yeah, it's, you know, we're not used to going into this much detail about the evidence and the data with patients, but I think for a situation that's this complicated, there's a lot more context that we need to provide.
With regards to the final ethical principle of autonomy, I want to try and get after this with a hypothetical clinical scenario with you and hear how you think our listeners might consider approaching it in the context of this position statement. So let's imagine a patient with relatively early but clinically probable Alzheimer's disease comes to see you with her family, and she expresses that she's interested in starting treatment with aducanumab. Let's imagine further that this patient tells you that she saw that aducanumab reduces beta amyloid in her brain, and for her, that's enough to insist that this is a potential partial cure for her Alzheimer's and that she very much wants to start treatment. How does the ethical principle of autonomy, along with the considerations we've already discussed, influence your conversation and counseling of this patient and her family?
Let me answer that question both from the perspective of an author of this position statement that's really an American Academy of Neurology position, but also as a clinician and how I see these patients in my own practice. And there's a little bit of personal style there as well. In the position statement, we write that respect for autonomy in complex medical decisions is best demonstrated through the process of shared decision-making. The key idea in this model of shared decision-making is that the patient and doctor have different kinds of expertise. The patient's the expert about their own values, and the doctor's the expert about the evidence. And in shared decision-making, we bring together these values and this, you know, physiologic and other scientific expertise to make a clinical recommendation. So in a case like the one you describe, I think it would be important to elicit the patient's expectations regarding the likelihood of clinical benefit, how they think about the medical risks and costs of treatment, and also to address potential misconceptions, right? So if the patient thinks that aducanumab could possibly cure or reverse memory deficits, it would be important to clarify that the best we can really hope for is a partial slowing of disease progression. Now, in my own practice, I can say I've had several of these discussions now. So far, I haven't had any patients for whom, considering their personal health values, I recommended treatment with aducanumab. The case you've described is one in which a patient really wants to reduce her brain beta amyloid, and I can say that in my clinic, patients tend to care more about cognition and functional independence and medical risks than about protein deposition, so I've focused my counseling on those factors. But for a patient like the one you describe, I can envision a conversation in which, as we go through, you know, their understanding of the disease and what they really want, you know, it really becomes clear that aducanumab with could make sense given their values. And, you know, personally, as a clinician, in that kind of case, I would help the patient proceed as long as I'm sure they understand the practical ramifications of treatment. I do think there's room here, though, for differences of opinion among clinicians about whether this treatment is reasonable. As you may know, there are several practices that have decided not to offer aducanumab to any patient, which I think is ethically justifiable if, in their professional judgment, none of their patients' values would be served by this treatment, given the problems we've mentioned about the lack of evidence for clinical benefit and the known clinical harms.
Thanks, Winston. I think that was really helpful. And I think this discussion, hopefully for our listeners, is going to add to their knowledge and ability to really weigh all of the data, scientific, financial, and economic and political, as they're making decisions for their own practice about how to proceed forward. I've been speaking with Winston Chong from the University of California, San Francisco, about the AAM position statement that he co-authored titled Decisions with Patients and Families Regarding Aducanumab and Alzheimer's Disease with Recommendations for Consent. Thanks, Winston, for coming back to the podcast and to walk us through the position statement as well as your personal considerations from your own practice for these challenging decisions and conversations.
This is Jose Merino. Please remember that we offer free CME for each Tuesday podcast. Simply find the Neurology Podcast episode online and click on the CME quiz link. We offer up to 60 hours of CME for past shows and all are available online. It's free for AAN members. Be sure to check out this week's journal, which includes an article investigating the role of vascular collaterals in children with stroke, as well as a study exploring how physical activity affects the association of air pollution with varying volume. Please take a look at this and other articles in this week's issue. Thank you again for listening, and have a great week.
The views and opinions of the participants in this podcast do not necessarily reflect those of the journal Neurology or the AAN. Disclosures of the participants are included in the show descriptions, reached by a link on the neurology.org website.